Session number 27189, Reel 5.
Colonel Paulson, Reel 5. You were saying you didn't. You decided not to shoot the reindeer poacher because it would be some time before he got home and he didn't know what you were doing and he couldn't tell his story in time to make a difference.
Yes, I think that was the reason why we let him go.
Right.
Well, yes. And we knew the operation was very important. On the other hand, it's difficult just to shoot a man, to kill him.
It would have been out of character, wouldn't it?
It would have been out of character, yes.
Yeah.
But certainly, it was a risk. But, before Gunnarsheid arrived, all the time when we stayed in the mountains, at each moon period, when we waited for Gunnarsheid could arrive, we had always the last intelligence from Vemork ready. A fortnight or so before the Gunnarsheid arrived, Skinnerland had, or Hellberg had, no, yes, Skinnerland and Hellberg had made contact with Selås with a long list of questions which we wanted answered. And it was also agreed that on a certain day at a certain time, Hellberg were going to meet a man in Rjukan, or at the what do you call it, the cable the car going up meet the man there to get this information. And the day after Gunnarsheid arrived, I think it was the day after, Hellberg went along to meet this man, Sørli. Rønneberg is saying he put up a long list of, or we did, of questions about German guards and so on. And Hellberg took it with him. But all this was arranged a long time before Gunnarsheid arrived. Mm-hmm. Maybe Hellberg brought with him a few more questions. But the man Sørli didn't work at the Vemork. He was just a messenger at that time.
And
Sørli too has written this down. So it's nothing I'm making up. But then we decided to go down to the Fjøspedalen, and we had arranged to meet Hellberg there when he got back from Rjukan, and that we did.
When you were making the plan, were you making the plan on a map, or were you making the plan just verbally, without a map?
A map?
Yeah.
Well, yes, we had maps, yes. Mm-hmm. But except in bad weather, we didn't need a map. I am from Rjukan, Hellberg was from Rjukan, Skinnerland was from Rjukan. Mm. We all knew our way around without a map. Mm.
But for the purpose of making the plan for the approach and the attack, were those plans made on maps, or did you just...
No. Nothing was put on paper.
You didn't need to.
But when Hellberg got back from Rjukan, and we met him in Fjordbodalen. Then the question was how to get into
the plant.
Into the plant. And we in Gross as well had discussed this hundreds of times when we were in the mountain. And we thought that the best approach was over the bridge. Was only two Germans there. They didn't carry rifles, they carried pistols. And it wouldn't have been too difficult to send a man in. We were going to be uniformed, but we had, we and girls had civilian, what's it called, anoraks.
Yes.
So it would have been no difficulties to get down to the bridge and talk to the Germans there and put them out of action without any firing, I think. And Rønneberg too. He agreed with me in this. We in Gross, I mean Helberg and I, we didn't think it would be possible to cross the gorge further down. I hadn't made any attempt to make a reconnaissance. But as I said, Rønneberg agreed with me. Let us try the bridge. But it was Haukeli who insisted on let us make a reconnaissance. And that reconnaissance could only be made by either Helberg or me, and it had to be made in daylight. And that was also one of the reasons why I hadn't made a reconnaissance earlier on, because had we been seen going down there and up on the other side, it could have compromised the whole operation. But it, Haukeli meant we should try. And Rønneberg agreed. And then it was either Helberg to me or me. And Helberg was the most was most fit. And I was a leader for you. Well, I had some. I ought to have gone. And I remember it very well because I had a bad conscience about it. But Helberg was sent to make this reconnaissance. And he was not told by Rønneberg that he was going to do it. He was pointing out the place where we were going to cross and so on. That is bloody nonsense. Helberg. It was up to him to find where to cross. As long as it wasn't too near the suspension bridge, so it could be seen from there. And Helberg was able to find the route down and up on the other side to the railway line there.
How long did that take him to do that reconnaissance? Because he must have thought about various different places along the gorge.
Half a day.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
On
he left in the middle of the day, arrived in the evening. But it was a great risk to take.
Very serious. Mm-hmm. On the bridge, where was the German guard post? Was it on the far side of the suspension bridge by the plant, or was it on your side of the bridge?
I I was down there, Helberg, I was down before the freshman operation to look at the guard. At that time, one was marching up and down, and the other one was on the far side. I mean, not on the Weymouth side, but on the other side.
Yes.
But if that was the case under the Gunnershand operation, I don't remember. I can't tell you.
What other posts, defence posts, did the Germans have around the plant?
After the war, we know that they had a guard going between the power station and the electrolysis plant, up against the railway gate where we come in, and back again on the back side of the power station, a short way back, up to the, where the pipelines came down. He was supposed to go there. He and two Norwegians were supposed to go there. Okay. And they didn't show up during the whole operation, not after the explosion either. Had I done their duty, we would have had a fight from the beginning. I think the job would have been done, but we would have had a fight. Mm.
So you've got two men on the bridge, and then you've got three men who were patrolling round the plant. Were there any machine gun posts or fixed positions defending the plant?
In the, if I go through all telegrams which we sent to England, we say that it's a machine gun post on the top of the electrolysis plant, that floodlight and so on. And there was a... But I don't think it's true.
You don't think there was anything there?
There was a guard hut between the electrolysis plant and the power station. Mm. And up at the top of the pipelines, what to call it, for daily spasang up there, the Germans had 15 men, and there were 15 men down at Weymouth.
15 men, if they're working on three shifts, that means you've got five on duty at any one time.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's 15 men up on the side of the mountain and 15 men by the 15 men by the plant, so that's five men not on duty in each place, roughly. What about other forms of defence, obstacles, wire? What about barriers, wire, things like that? Was the plant, did it have a secure perimeter with barbed wire around it or anything of that sort?
I have a map. It's dated 43. Mm. Where there have been mines around the Weymouth. On both sides of the pipelines, on the top, and down at Weymouth. But it's dated 1943. We were told there was that was mines, but I don't think the minefields they had in 43 was much larger than the one they had in 42. I'm not sure of this. Mm.
Mm. So you've done you've got the information about the guard, and Ivar Helberg had done his recce.
Yes.
And what was the next stage? Was the next stage straight into the attack on the day after that, or was there a pause between the reconnaissance and the operation?
Well, it. this, I think we started from Fjordsbrodalen at 8 o'clock in the afternoon, in the evening. But the weather has changed dramatically. It was a what do you call it, fern.
Was that a wind blowing?
Fern wind blowing. The snow was melting. The roads, the water was running in on the road, and so on. But we went down to the main road, followed it down. It make a turn like this before the mark, left the road, and came down on the road again. On the other side of the war, so we bypassed the inhabited area there, followed the road to the place where Hellberg had found it was possible to cross the gorge, left all our winter equipment, parapet, skis and what have you there. We were in British battle dresses. Had only our the prepared demolition charges and our weapons. Ian Gross had got gunfire, Thompson machine guns, machine pistols, which was in Gross too. So we didn't only have a stain gun, so then we didn't use it. We got.
So you were carrying your personal equipment. You had a stain gun.
No, I didn't have a stain gun.
You didn't carry a stain gun.
I didn't rely on the stain gun. Ah. The Thompson was much.
So you had a? Did you have a Thompson?
I had a Thompson and my own pistol.
Yeah. Was this the Thompson with a box magazine or a drum?
No, a box.
A box.
Okay.
And you mentioned demolition charges. What sort of charges were they? Were these hollow charges of plastic explosive?
No, it was plastic.
Yes.
But I had nothing to do with with that thing.
Yeah.
Rennerberg and his men knew everything worth knowing about the plant, the apparatus, the thing they were going to blow up and so on. So they were very, very well briefed and had tried out those charges on dummy in Great Britain. So they certainly knew what they were doing.
And what was your role to be then? Was that to
guard
the...
We were divided into a demolition party and a covering party.
Right.
And Gunnarsheid was certainly in charge of the operation when he started. Mm. And Haukeli was in charge of the covering party. He was second in command to Rennerberg. And that was okay with me, certainly. But I was in the covering party with Haukeli, Hellberg, Kjellstrup, and I think Storhaug. When we crossed the river down in the gorge, there was quite a lot of water there, and there was only one ice bridge which could be used for crossing. We were very lucky because it was a very rough lot of stones and so on. If we hadn't been able to cross there, where Hellberg had made this reconnaissance, we would have had to find another place down there. And that could have been difficult because of the change of weather and all the water down there. We just couldn't
You couldn't wade?
No, we couldn't.
How deep was the water, do you think?
Like until.
Was it flowing fast?
Yes, it was flowing fast. A lot of boulders and so on down there. We passed over this ice bridge and was still standing when we got back again.
How thick was the ice on the ice bridge? About half a metre or a bit less?
Yes. Well, I can't tell you. Like this, I think.
Yeah. When you were going down the side of the gorge, were you going down on your own as an individual, or were you connected by ropes with...
Wasn't necessary to use any ropes. Today, the tourist industry in the Vesterålen, they are very interested in this thing, and they have found the place where they think we crossed. But just before I died, Helbert told me that can't be true because you have to use a rope there today.
Yes.
I had never been there after since 42. So it was not difficult actually to get down and up again on the other side. But in old books and stories about it, this was a very dangerous thing to go down there and up again. It wasn't dangerous at all.
Was there any light that night when you were going across the gorge?
It was a full moon. Or nearly full. But you can't see the moon down there. But still there, the light is... it isn't very dark.
So you could see enough to...
You see enough, climb. Yes.
Do you have any idea of how long it took you to go down the gorge, across the river and up the other side?
I don't know, 3/4 of an hour? I don't know.
You got across the gorge, you got to the far side, top of the bank, and what happened after that? What was the next thing?
Well, we advanced... I think a couple of hundred yards. There was a shed there, and we waited there because we knew when the guard on the bridge were relieved, and we didn't want to attack when they were when it was a new guard on the bridge and the two others were on the way up. So we waited until we were sure they were back and had got into their guard hut. And then Rødberg gave the order to start. And he and his demolition party went for the heavy water room. Actually, they had to use a cable tunnel to get in. But the covering party took up their pre-planned positions. Hercule and I, for instance, advanced up to the 20 yards from the guard hut. Was something we could hide behind there and stay there until we heard the bang, a very small bang. And because of the humming of the machinery, I mean the noise of the we didn't have to whisper, we could talk. So we waited there. Helberg had his position, Kjellstrup had his, and so on. And nothing happened. in that tribal guard with Bishop. We didn't know that at the time. But the guard who was supposed to patrol that area, he wasn't there. But when the explosion occurred, the door to the guard had opened, and the Germans came out, used his torchlight like this, didn't see anything, and went back in. And after a while, all of us just went away the same way he had come.
Did the Germans on the bridge do anything?
No.
Was anyone watching them?
No. So we went, followed the railway to where we had come up, went down, up to our equipment on the other side, and went down the parallel road towards Rjukan. But the funny thing is, at the Vemork side, inside the minefield and so on, was quite a number of houses for people who worked at Vemork. And that evening, one of the engineers at Vemork had a party, and people, some friends from Rjukan, had passed the bridge in the evening, there at the party when this thing happened, and stayed there until the next morning, and went back again over the bridge and home. They weren't questioned at all.
Nothing happened to them?
Nothing happened. The Sherman's guard at Vemork, at the bridge, knew they had passed. So it would have been very natural to at least question them.
But they didn't do that.
Rather funny. And the Germans found out that where we had left the railway line and got on into the gorge. But after that I lost later on they knew we had to come up on the other side.
Yes.
But that was everything they knew.
It's rather strange the Germans were not taking more care. I would expect that they would have had more men, they might have had dogs to protect such an important installation.
Sure, we thought it would have been much better, that would have been much better guarded. And we also overestimated the Germans' will to, their ability to put up its search just after the thing was blown up. And when we were back and went down the parallel road towards Rjukan, we mentioned at that time that German reinforcements were coming up the road. But today we know it was only two cars with the director of Norsk Hydro at Rjukan, the chief of police, the chief of the German Sicherheitsdienst, and a few other Germans. That was what we thought